This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello and welcome to the BritRest Roundtable. This is the Brixton edition. We're going to be talking about Chapter 36, the progress of their biggest show ever at the Brixton Academy. Arn, who is joining me.
Hello.
Hello, Arn. was there at the show, and I was not, but I have reviewed it for the site. That will be should be out by the time this drops. And we'll be talking about everything that went on over that weekend. We'll also be talking about WCPW's latest iPay-per-view foray and whether that worked or not. Spoilers, it did not. And a few other things as well. So we'll get into it with the progress. And Chapter 36 had a lot of build-up. We covered it quite a lot, so I think we should just go straight into the action and the matches and talk about the actual show rather than the build-up to it, and then we can get on to like what happened afterwards and all the lads' banter, etc.
Shenanigans.
The shenanigans. So yeah, the first match was for the first ever Atlas Championship reign for either Rampage Brown or Joe Coffey, the end of the Atlas tournament. What did you think of the tournament, and what did you think of this match?
Well, first of all, I'd say that it was kind of incredible being in the in Brixton Academy. I don't know how it came across on tape. Did it come across really atmospheric, or?
I was gonna say it kind of looked like an awkward venue to hold wrestling in, because it, you had
kind of the... was because the ring was on the stage.
Yeah.
And then like you had the crowd kind of out in front of that. So there was hardly any fans around the ring. There was only like a couple of rows on each side, and then the one side had like 2,500 people on it. But it's kind of weird because there wasn't like a bad place to sit. I mean, I was kind of on the floor and like back about halfway on the left, and my view was completely fine. Which, I mean, your call, you can go to and be eight rows back and have a shitty view.
Mm.
Because the floor in the Brixton Academy is ever so slightly, like, there's like a little gradient there as it goes up from, like, where the stage is to the back. It's like a false floor. So you can kind of see over people, which I thought was pretty cool. I don't know what it was like up on the balcony, but from speaking to people, it's the general consensus is that it was a really good venue to watch. But I just wondered what it was like on video. I mean, I've watched the video, but like I was remembering what it was like there, so it's probably not the same.
It did seem a little awkward, like you had just kind of 100 people around the ring, and then this vast swathe of people on just one side of a ring, and it like you never really got a feel for just how many people there were there until FSU like ran down the aisle and partied hard with everyone like on that side. Like it seemed like the wrestlers were kind of treating it like a normal venue and didn't really know how to like interact with the crowd on that side as well as they could have if it was like a typical Electric Ballroom style venue.
It's kind of tough because, like, you had the upper deck, like the tier that's above, and if you went out into the crowd, they couldn't see. But everywhere could see the ring perfectly, so I think they kind of made the decision to stick around there. Because when there was, like, when you say when FSU were out there in the crowd, Mark Andrews did a little flip off the lower balcony, and I'm pretty sure you couldn't see that from anywhere on the top.
Just because I don't think I even noticed it during the match. So
it definitely happened. I could see it from where I was. So
he did an unacknowledged flip.
But yeah, the atmosphere in the building was like before the show. You kind of you know how it's like at Progress, where you get that build up beforehand, where there's certain music cues that kick in, and you're like, oh, it's gonna start soon. So they did the whole start from the bottom. I think it's Drake. Is it Drake?
It is Drake. Yes.
Yeah. So they played that, but they played like a video that went along with it, and they put this onto on the VOD, and watching that in the venue, that felt very special, because it's like, this is where we started and this is where we are now, and it played off really well. And after that, I think it's either after that or just before that, they played the CKY song, the theme music for Chris Travis used. I can't remember the name of the song.
96 Quite Bitter Beings.
There we go. So that played, and as soon as people recognised what it was, everyone was on their feet.
Yeah.
And like, you had the whole crowd standing up applauding for like the whole length of the song. And I must admit, I got choked up just having everyone come together like that and just stand there and applaud. It was a beautiful moment.
Awesome. Yeah, it did seem like very much a moment show. And like, especially if you were in the live crowd, it came off like that very well. Knowing all the moments before I watched them and not being in the live crowd, like, react and flip my shit, like, it didn't come off quite as well, I feel. Like, especially the Jimmy Havoc moment at the end of the show, like,
yeah,
it was very diminished knowing it was going to happen and not being there live to react to it. It was still cool, but, like, yeah, like, it didn't translate to me.
I've kind of taken us off track a little bit, so if we get back to the back to the opening match before we start talking about the main event.
Yeah.
The Atlas tournament, like we said before, there's been a feeling that it just hasn't quite worked. They've had some bad luck with injuries, and the booking hasn't worked out because of that. And I think we're hyped up for the final, thinking, well, at least the final's going to be really good. And I don't know about you, but I thought it was kind of flat.
Yeah, I've written in my review that people should just go and watch their first match, which was a lot better than this. It was still a decent match, but they didn't get enough time to really like play off the story that they had tied in the past, so it just came off like they were just having a wrestle, and there wasn't really any past to it. There wasn't any big meaning behind it. It didn't feel like a championship match.
Like when they went out onto the floor and started throwing elbows down there, that kind of was a throwback to what happened in the first match. Something I've noticed recently about Joe Coffey is that I don't think he's as strong as he thinks he is. You see him trying to go for like these. I can't remember if it was this match or another match I've seen recently, but he went to do his like giant swing and he just couldn't do it because Rampage was too heavy.
Yeah,
and there's other things that he's doing where it's just like the timing's not quite there, and I don't know if he's just going through a bit of a stretch at the moment where he's trying to perform above the level that he's at,
which can certainly happen, especially like on the Euro scene where like there's such high standards, but not everyone can meet them.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, Joe's a really good wrestler, but. There's things that I've seen him do recently where I'm like, that didn't really come off. And maybe he should stick to what he's really good at.
And generally, like, I feel like putting this on first kind of not devalued the championship, but it just meant that it never had any chance to really succeed. It could only merely be a good match and not a great one.
I think the crowd was ready for something big, and it didn't quite deliver in that slot. If it was on any other show, I think it would have been fine, like in the middle of the card somewhere, and it was an okay match. But it was probably, for me, I think it was probably apart from the other match that you didn't get to see, I would say it was probably the low point of the show, which absolutely shocked me, because I was expecting it to be on a par with what they did in the block match, where they had the 15-minute draw.
The problem is, the only way the match would have really worked is if it had gone beyond 15 minutes, which is really what they should have done, but they obviously didn't have the time to on this particular card. So it's a matter of circumstance meant that they couldn't like fulfill the potential of the match and the story.
It's unfortunate. I mean, I think the Big Lads division is going to be good going forwards because Rampage is a great wrestler. And he's good at that big lad style. I think whoever they get to challenge him, it's going to be a good match. Mm. But it's unfortunate that the whole tournament to get there, it had a far few highs than we were hoping for. And it's very rare that we say this about progress. So it's these things happen, though.
I feel the tournament will be remembered for just two matches. The Rampage group match and Walter versus Mastiff as part of a Super Strong style. Those are the two matches which defined the tournament, and then everything else was nothing else was bad, but nothing else was particularly good either. So
yeah, that like I said, the standard was kind of there, but I don't think anybody killed it apart from those two matches that you mentioned, which is unfortunate. You kind of hope when you have a new title and you have a big tournament final that match is going to be an absolute killer. It's going to be the best match in the tournament, and it wasn't.
Yeah. We'll move on to the second match, which was a ton of fun.
Yes.
Six women. Between Ginny, Alex Windsor, and...
Dahlia.
Who else?
Dahlia Black.
How can you forget Dahlia Black? Versus Nixon Newell, Pollyanna, and Laura DiMatteo. Like I say, ton of fun right from the entrances. Laura DiMatteo was much perkier than usual. Got running around, high-fiving everyone. He had Dahlia Black being awful with TK Cooper, who had stolen one of my girlfriend's dresses for this occasion. What was like he wearing?
He was wearing dungarees. Wears dungarees? I insulted him because I reviewed this show for 411, and I called him a dick and a cunt in the review for coming out dressed like that. Because let's face it, that's just it's embarrassing, isn't it? But like he's a heel.
He did look like a massive dick.
He did. He did. I almost felt sorry for insulting him because he's already insulted himself by wearing that to the ring. But yeah, the ladies are all good though. All the women in this match all did terrific work. It's nice that because we'd seen some women's wrestling all over the place at the moment. People are trying to push women's wrestling because it's a draw. I'm really glad Progress are doing it the right way. They've built up their own talent. They've had various feuds involving these six women, and now they're going to do a tournament as well for Natural Progression Series 4, and they've already got like six women that are over, and chances are if they're doing an eight woman tournament, they only need to find two more that are really good, and it should be terrific.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing that I really liked about this match was that interconnecting feuds thing going on. Like, as soon as one woman stepped into the ring, and like the commentary would always have something to say about what she felt about the woman she was facing at that moment. Like, they all played off of each other really well. Like, they've built up the feuds really well. Obviously, Nixon and Alex Windsor only have the one match between each other, but it still felt very personal between the two. Like, they had unfinished beef. And the other four have been feuding between each other for about a year now, so they have a lot of history together.
Well, yeah, Alex and Nixon they kind of slipped into that whole organic thing that's going on. It's like there was natural hatred between all the people in this match, and the work was really strong as well.
Yeah, I thought Laura DiMatteo shined because she got to hit a lot of really cool maneuvers.
I fear for Laura's neck. She landed on her neck and right at the top of the back a couple of times in this match, and it's starting to make me wince because she's not like a very big girl. She's about 5'5" maybe, and it just makes me wince. It's like the Sasha Banks thing where like every time she goes for a tope, I'm kind of scared she's going to kill herself. I kind of get that with Laura as well, even though she seems to be landing them a bit safer. It's like she's throwing herself onto her neck just to kind of, you know, prove a point almost that she can hang with these other girls. And just, I worry that she's going to get hurt.
But in the six-man environment, I think six-woman environment, she did really well because she didn't have to construct a match around for really cool moves. She just got to do what she does best, and that's like fling herself around. Ginny did really well as her foil and like threw some really cool, there was a cool spot where Dahlia threw knees into Pollyanna and then chucked her into Ginny, who did the not quite a C4 but something a bit like it into the corner, and like that just looked like it decked Pollyanna, which was one of the highlights of the match.
In terms of in-ring, yeah, just I think, the fast I think Ginny action. Has improved a lot.
Ginny has improved
a lot, Ginny
has
improved
definitely.
A great deal.
She feels like a veteran presence with the other women now.
She'd always had the heat. She always had no problem at all getting reactions. But like her match structure was always a little bit like, you know, stomps and, you know, there wasn't much to it. But like the structure of her matches now is, it has like a, it feels like she's leading the match. Like she really wants to take charge and she feeds the comebacks in so well and her selling's improved. It's like the difference between like her now and her when she first came into to Progress, it's a huge jump and she's on her way up. I think she's going to get even better.
This is why I still feel confident for a Ginny Laura rematch after the first match kind of flopped. I feel like they have improved since then, even just a few months ago. I think they've improved since then and have more confidence. So I would like to see them do that again. I would have liked to see them do that here, to be honest. I had some questions surrounding the six-woman deal. Like, was it just a throw of the women onto one match thing going on? I would have maybe preferred the grudge match for this stage, but we'll see if they go back to it down the line. I'm sure they will, because
I'm
the
sure
ending
they
of
will.
This match set it up. So
they very deliberately put all of them on this show just to give them a chance to you know, show off in front of a big crowd. So I appreciate that. When I know you're saying about the one grudge match, but they're trying to get the whole division over ahead of like Natural Progression Series 4, and they did that here. Like everyone got over. Everyone was really good in this match.
Completely agree. Like it was exactly the sort of match that I needed. Like I was in the mood for that kind of fast paced, fun, not very serious, but just like all action, turn your brain off stuff. And they delivered it. This is one of my favorite matches on the show. Maybe my second favorite match.
Oh wow! Big praise. I didn't have it anywhere near that high, but I definitely enjoyed it. The after this match was William Eva against Sebastian, which was completely removed from the VOD because of what happened. Do you want to explain what happened live?
Well, you were there live, so yeah. You go for it.
Okay, so they do the introductions, and like Seb, as he's being introduced, like turns round in the middle of the ring, and Eva batters him with a lariat, like the is it called Clothesline from Heaven?
I believe so. Yeah,
I think that's
a good name.
What he calls it. Yeah, really throws himself into that thing, and it looked brutal. And so Seb hits the deck. He makes Eva makes the cover, and the ref counts, and it's a three count. It's over. Like Sebastian doesn't kick out, doesn't move, and the ref's like, "Hang on, that wasn't the finish." So he stops counting, and Eva like gets off the cover, and Seb doesn't move, and he's out, completely knocked out. And at that point, they just go, "Oh." The match stops, like Glenn Joseph comes down, jumps into the ring to check on him, and they have paramedics come in and stuff, and that's it, match's over.
Yeah.
If you're the referee, do you count to three there? Because like, he's out.
This is why WWE train their referees to always count to three, even if like it's not supposed to be the finish, just because like, it's kayfabe covering, but like in this situation that doesn't really matter so much as the health of the guy, so it's a non-issue. Well, I guess
it kind of turned out to be fine in the end because he was just knocked out, whereas like, you know, he could have suffered some very serious neck injury just based on the snap he got on his bump. It's just one of those things that happens. I was pleased that Sebastian was fine afterwards, because the worry when you're there in the live crowd is like, I really hope he's okay, because that,
yeah,
you know, it looked bad.
I obviously didn't see it live, but yeah, it sounded pretty scary by all accounts, so I'm glad that he appears to be okay. Like, I worry for his long-term health, I guess, but it seems like everything's okay.
I don't think they've had anything like that happen before in progress, and it's until you're there, until it's happening, it's very hard to deal with that, and I think they did a good job of it. And Jim had to come and talk to the audience and just say, like, just kind of talk about yourselves for a minute. You know, this is very serious injury. I'm not fucking about, is what he said. Because part of the crowd was chanting one more time. They obviously didn't know it was a legitimate injury. They thought it was a storyline. So it worked out okay. I feel bad for the guys, because they probably had a pretty decent match worked out and they didn't get to do it.
Well, it appears that that story is over now, essentially, because Sebastian won't be coming back anytime soon, and obviously we've criticized the story, so it's somewhat mercifully over, but obviously we wouldn't want it to happen in this kind of scenario. But yeah, Eva can now move on to something else.
Yeah, that was unfortunate, but and it took a while afterwards to get the crowd kind of back into the show again.
I can imagine. Like, it's like it kind of mirrors the Enzo Amore situation from earlier. Like, it just kills interest in the rest of the show until you know that he's at least like moving around and generally okay.
Yeah, but there was only one more match in the first half, so it's like the atmosphere kind of sank a bit for that one match.
Yeah,
and then it kind of came back again in the second half, because there was an announcement during like the half time that Seb was up and walking around and that he was all right, and it was like, oh,
okay,
like, Christ for that. So it kind of allowed us to get back into the show. And at the time, because the next match is the tag title match, so it was the London Riots and British Strong Style, and I was really looking forward to this match. And when it started, like, everyone's down, and I was down.
Yeah.
And even before the match, Trent Seven has a pop at Rob Lynch saying he's not Strong Style because he got injured the night before. And I can't remember the exact details of it, but Big Rob had some pretty gnarly injuries. He got like a broken orbital bone, I think, and a broken nose from a match he'd had in Preston for Preston City the night before. But like Trent comes out and says that, and all of a sudden the crowd like, oh. And you could just hear the kind of the interest in the match kind of drop off a bit, because it's like, well, we don't really want to see him get hurt because we just saw somebody else get hurt. And it took about half the match before the crowd were back in there.
Okay. So here's the difference between going to it live versus watching it on video, because this was my favorite match in the whole show. It wasn't an amazing match by any means. I don't think any match on the show was great, but this was my favorite of all the matches. I eat up British Strong Style for breakfast.
Lunch and dinner. This
definitely played to what I wanted to see, which was four guys levering each other.
It was definitely better.
Being removed from the Seb situation live means I could enjoy this one a lot more.
Because I watched the whole thing on VOD afterwards, because I wanted to see what it was like on there. And I enjoyed this match a lot more the second time round.
Yeah.
The first time round, I was a little bit disappointed with it, mainly because of the whole vibe coming off the Sebastian injury. But yeah, I'd say it's just a shade under 4 stars for me.
I'd go there, yeah. Like the way British Strong Style worked around the injury and like just always went to like poke him in the eye and like grab him by the head.
And that must have sucked as well. With the you got a broken orbital bone, you got somebody smacking you in the head with a cricket bat. That's That's bad news.
There were spots in this match which I found overly cutesy, like all the like tandem biting bits and like, oh, let's all do the same move at the same time. It just felt kind of over, like too overly rehearsed for like such a big guy match. That it felt too cutesy, and like I'd rather just see straight up. Because, like, we've had this sort of discussion, like, what is strong style? No one really knows what it is. I guess strong style is just none of the over-rehearsed stuff, just levering each other, like, lariats and all that stuff. And there was a lot of that here, but the match kind of dragged when they were trying to do the showpiece stuff.
I quite like the, like, when the match ended, there's, like, this shock of silence, and then there's like this jeering, and when I was watching it live, it's like the I jumped out of my chair and screamed yes when they won the belt, and I think there was maybe like three other people in the building that did that, and then like everyone else started booing. So I was interested to see how that came off on tape, but I don't think you can hear me. So I was quite far back in the building, which is good because another thing that kind of pissed me off being there live was right behind me was the section of guys that they were trying to get the moose thing off.
Oh.
And you
did you have words with them?
I was just down on that part of the crowd, and it was right behind, like literally I was at the back of like the first block of seats, and then this was somewhere in the front. I didn't even look round, so I was just like, ugh.
You were wearing your British Strong Style shirt, so you were inadvertently flipping them off.
I wasn't wearing it at the show. I should have been. So that kind of pissed me off. And that was kind of how far back I was, that I don't think my noise was making it to the front.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing because it means you can't really hear the moose stuff on the
I heard the moose stuff a couple of times on the show, but nothing overtly.
Yeah, it wasn't as annoying
fucking
as it was.
Moose stuff.
Fucking moose. Yeah.
Since you're having a nag about your section of the crowd, can I have a nag about the one guy who kept running up to the ring and like touching the wrestlers and like hugging them and shit? Because I want to nag about that.
Okay, go nuts.
Stop thinking you're the show. You're not the show. Stop. Yeah, that's my nag. you are not the show. Sit down and suck a lemon.
I was pleased with how the crowd reacted to a lot of the show, but that's a bit overboard. You did get a lot of good stuff, like when, I'm getting ahead of myself again, with the FSU match the FSU Origin match, and when Jimmy Havoc came out, the reactions in the building were just fucking incredible.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed the reactions, and like even just the individual reactions of people, like just like going mental and like they can't even believe what they're seeing. That's what I really like. It's when like you just see natural reactions and not people like hamming it up and like trying to be seen. That's not what it's about. It's about fucking enjoying yourself, not like pretending you are the show. That's just my soapbox rant for today.
I assume that guy was really enjoying himself.
I'm sure he was enjoying himself, but he just needs to enjoy himself less ostentatiously. Anti-fun police for here. The attack.
For the crowd in general, I enjoyed the crowd. I was kind of thinking, you've got 2,500 people in there. You've normally got 700 in the ballroom. I was worried that you'd kind of lose some of that atmosphere, but you really didn't lose a lot of it, just a little bit.
It translated very well. Like, I feel obviously the people right at the back weren't getting heard on the cameras, but even though you couldn't really tell how big the crowd was just by looking at it, and they maybe could have done a better job of making that 2,400 number look like 2,400, but they certainly sounded like 2,400. It sounded really good.
Yeah, they definitely got the miking up right, and I thought the camera work was really strong. They had a couple of guys roaming around with cameras, and you get the cuts from to them sometimes when like there was crowd action. You have the guys out there, so you could really kind of capture the atmosphere of what it was like. You couldn't quite tell what it was like, but it was enough so you could kind of grasp what the building was like to be in.
And it was one thing I did like production wise was seeing the video board in all its glory, because before we've just had like a dim projection and you couldn't what's going on. So you can see the names and like generally the shapes going on there, but like it was fun seeing all the video, like all the little mini-trons of everyone in like their full glory. And like I noticed details that I hadn't seen before, like Zack Sabre Jr.'s little British flag unzipping itself into his name. So I enjoyed that a little bit.
Well, there was
and
that
also obviously when Jimmy Havoc came out and just the Die Havoc Die with like the blood flowing down the screen, that was great.
It was also an excellent tool for watching the show. Like I'm saying, there weren't any bad seats, but you can never see what's happening down when the action comes outside the ring and it's kind of down on the floor. You can't see that in that kind of building, regardless of how good the view is, unless you're right at the front. So having the video wall behind the ring allowed me to not miss a thing. Yeah, the only problem was that sometimes I kind of looked up at the screen instead of watching what was happening in the ring. So, you know, I've come all this way to watch a television. It worked very well.
Awesome. So we'll move on to the second half now, and that started off with the rubber match between Zack Sabre Jr. and the departing Tommaso Ciampa. Oh, of course not. I'm fucking jumping ahead. It's Paul Robinson versus Chuck Mambo. Yes. Impromptu.
Yeah,
I've been impromptu'd by Paul Robinson's vile, vile behaviour.
The original, scorecard, as it were. Yeah, when Robinson came out and demanded a match, that was the point at which everyone in the crowd's going, oh, "Is Jimmy Havoc here?" And I mean, I think it was Ian had even like queued a tweet up saying like "Ready for Jimmy Havoc" or something along those lines. But, and then it's Chuck Mambo, and everyone was like, oh.
Oh, here's some beach balls.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is they immediately salvage the reaction by turning the entire building into a massive party and throwing a load of beach balls out of the at the back of the venue. And all
I
of
very
sudden,
much enjoy the beach ball entrance.
Yeah,
so they did that at Super Strong Style, and that was... Because, like, no one particularly cared about that match, it was just a filler match, but... Like, then the beach balls come out, and it's like,
beach balls.
Have a party, and the match was benefited as a result. All jobbers should get, like, some sort of prop to throw around.
Well, no, that worked very effectively. I mean, the match was essentially just a squash. It was it was like 90% Robinson, and it was just there to remind us that, like, he's a real threat coming back into progress. And I thought he killed it. I thought he did a tremendous job. Alan Coonan was saying that he felt like Robinson's performance was the best on the show. I probably wouldn't go that far, but I thought he did do exceedingly well in getting his character across and reminding people of exactly who the fuck he is.
Definitely. It was a good reintroduction for the character. He's one of my favourites. I've been like calling for him to come back pretty much ever since he left. So very happy that he's back and hopefully back in... an upper card main event mix.
Well, from the way they treated him, I would have thought so, because I mean, he absolutely crushed poor Chuck.
Mm.
Yeah, it was.
Don't think they have any plans for Mambo.
No, this is the thing with a lot of the Projo guys. When they come out of there, it's like that they're not working that much. You know, they're working like Endeavor shows, and. I don't know about you, but I think they're not really getting the level of progression that you would hope they would at this stage. I mean,
I think maybe a resolution to that would be having some sort of dark match before a chapter show for Projo guys and like untested guys. Maybe like that would help them just get more experience on a bigger stage, because Endeavor's good, you know, they get bookings elsewhere, but. Maybe they need some bigger show experience.
Well,
a young Lions division, basically.
How long has Chuck Mambo been wrestling for?
4 or 5 years. Just I like putting you on the spot. He's the same class as Damon Moser and Eva. So
yeah. Well, let me put it like this: how long has Joe Hendry been wrestling for? Joe Hendry has been wrestling.
I wouldn't know.
Joe Hendry has been wrestling for 3 years.
Okay.
And look, I'd say look he's where more advanced he is, than Chuck Mambo. because he works for ICW and he wrestles all the time, compared to the guys that have come out of the Projo. And it doesn't always necessarily work, but like you get experience, you get the more in-ring time you get, the better you're going to get. And I feel like the likes of Mambo and Damon Moser, they would really benefit from just working more frequently in front of a crowd.
Definitely. I think I went on Cage Match for Damon Moser to see how many matches he'd been in. And on Cage Match recorded, he's only had 40 matches or so in like 3 years.
In three years. How many do you think Hendry's had? Putting you on the spot again there, but it's got to be way more than that. Way more. I'm just going to quickly look it up and see what, see how many he's had. See, yeah, so he's had 170 matches over the last 3 years.
Yeah.
that is a massive difference. And I think it shows where he's at and where like Mambo and Moser are at. You just need to get that experience. You need to get that in-ring experience.
It's a fair point. And two guys who had much experience, Zack Sabre Jr. and Tommaso Ciampa.
Yes.
We can now talk about what did you think of their third match together?
See, I love this match. I'm waiting to see what you didn't like about it, because you must have disliked something, otherwise you wouldn't have had it like pegged as third best match on the show, or possibly even lower than that, whatever. But I haven't actually read your review yet.
It hasn't dropped yet. It'll probably drop as we're recording this, actually. So it'll be there by the time this is up.
So I just really like technical wrestling, and this match was very, very technical.
It was perhaps overly technical. I thought the first fall, there were technically only two falls, but the first fall was very slow, and I was sort of gearing up for a free fall pace. I think I already knew that it was only two falls and that they tied the first fall, but like the way it was being wrestled was like, okay, this is the first fall, then they'll crescendo up to the second and the third, and then it never happened like that, and it was maybe a little disappointing that like there was just no build up to that final fall, and they just kind of went from like the technical stuff and then just a double pin and then straight into the epic stuff. And this is kind of our criticism of Ciampa over his progress run, is that he tries to make everything epic, and sometimes maybe he needs to reel it back a bit or build up to it a bit more first.
Well, he certainly built up like to it in this one.
He built up to it for a while, but it didn't really land for me, just because that double pin was just so out of the blue, and it felt like it just went by without anyone really acknowledging it. Like, it felt like such an insignificant part of a match, even though it should have been, like, the key part of the match.
I think this is going to be one of those matches that our opinion is split on.
I did very much enjoy the third fall, and especially the ending. I thought they got across every message, every key story point that they needed to, with Sabre kicking out of the first Project Ciampa, as he has done before. But then he also kicked out of a Pedigree. Yeah. Obviously, the Pedigree, like a very smarmy, you know, anti-indie move with its history. And then he kicked out of a top rope Project Ciampa, which looked amazing.
Avalanche.
And really made Ciampa look great. Sabre look great, even. And, like, Ciampa doesn't need protecting. He's out the door.
Yeah, yeah.
So he can give away that kind of move to Sabre, and it's fine. It only makes Sabre look really good, and I think they did really well by Sabre here. And, you know, Ciampa doesn't lose anything from doing that. He's off to WWE. He's already won.
I think
he can give that.
In this match, Progress have done Rev Pro a massive favour, because they've made Sabre look like a million fucking dollars, whereas Rev Pro, where he's the champion, have had him job to Kurt Angle.
It's very, very true. I feel like maybe Progress have done a better job booking their imports long term. They clearly had a good plan for Champaher. They clearly knew that he was off to WWE, so he never looked like better than Sabre Jr., but it's not like Sabre Jr. looks like way better than him. It's just Sabre Jr. looks really fucking strong for being able to kick out of that Project Champa and beat the guy who's off to WWE. So hopefully they do something with Sabre moving forward, potentially Sabre-Haskins title match, which would be a European dream match.
It would be very good. I really like this match, so I'm probably going to be like the high man on the totem pole out of... I don't know what... Rob hasn't seen it yet, has he?
He's waiting for... he's doing a Kizuna Road 2012. He's waiting for Endeavor to come out where the War Machine team faced the South Pacific Power Trip in singles competition. So...
okay.
He's Kizuna Roaded himself again.
That was Endeavor 17, wasn't it?
I don't know the Endeavor numbers off by heart, but that was the one.
The one with the two singles matches.
Yes, the one before 35. That's up. 30, it was before Chapter 34, actually, so it's quite a lot to catch up on.
That's definitely up, because I've seen it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I have not seen it, but.
Well,
as
you'd expect, those are two very good matches. Travis Banks and Ray Rowe and TK Cooper against Hansen. The Banks and Rowe match is better, but they're both very good matches. So if you're cherry-picking stuff from Endeavor, I'd watch those two. And there's a women's tag match on that as well that Ginny referees. That's pretty good.
Speaking of Travis Banks, notable by his absence on this show. Very, very disappointing that he wasn't here.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
But, like, they'd planned out the show before he'd become, like, such a hidden gem on the European scene. So, maybe that's why. Hopefully they have bigger plans for the South Pacific Power Trip going forward.
I hope so. But they've both been outstanding recently. I kind of get the feeling they didn't want to shoehorn them in somewhere just for the sake of it, but I'm sure that they'll feature in plans coming up. I know they're in a triple threat match for tag team contendership, which they probably won't win, but at least they're in the mix.
Okay, we'll move on to the Origin, the lads. Versus FSU, Damon Moser and Jack Gallagher.
We were all so convinced that the Origin were losing and getting broken up.
Yeah, it seemed like they were going to lose. And even like the way the match was laid out, it seemed like they were going to lose because they were once again like playing foil to everyone and giving the shine to the faces. But at the end, Zach Gibson looks really strong by beating the leaving Jack Gallagher.
But not only that.
In a very convincing way as well.
He got absolutely ridiculous heat on this show.
Oh yeah, the toilet paper spot was probably one of the most memorable things that happened on the show.
I think this is probably going to be a thing going on, because first of all you had streamers flying in, then there was beach balls, and then all of a sudden there's just toilet paper everywhere. There was still as I was walking out the venue, there's bits of toilet paper all over the building. Because it got dragged everywhere when they brawled around the building. So, that was something. That was a visual. Seeing all that
hell of a visual
raining in.
I believe it was Gallagher himself who planned that. He said something like, "How much do 100 toilet paper rolls cost?" to Jim Smallman.
Really?
So I believe he was the one who instigated it.
There was certainly the atmosphere before that match. I was talking about the atmosphere in the building just before that match, and like probably during the first half of it. It had some of the best reactions of the entire night. It's like from the point I think that Party Hard started playing, like everything from there up until the balcony dive and all the crazy stuff in the crowd. That was all just the reactions were ridiculous for that. It was like being in a either a rock concert or you're in a club and like your favorite song comes on and all your mates are there. It was like that. It was that kind of atmosphere in the crowd. Like people were dancing.
The Origin do that. They have that ability to make everyone against them seem just like ultra stars. Like at the Super Strong Style tournament, the day one main event where they were defending the tag titles and lost the tag titles, it was that kind of atmosphere. It was a party atmosphere, especially when they lost and everyone just like jumped to their feet, but they didn't really lose and John Briley had screwed up and was playing the music too early. And then they actually did win and it was just like going, everyone was going crazy. Like everyone was out of their seat. Alan Forel was like up on the balcony going crazy. It was a lot of fun, and I can imagine it was very similar here. I would also say that FSU were the first wrestlers who like conquered that entranceway, that stubby little entranceway, by just like blowing straight past it and going straight into the crowd, and like you say, partying hard with everyone there. Like it felt like they were the first people who had like mastered interacting with that venue and like that crowd setup.
It's like the when their music kicked in, everyone's up on their feet and like you know, there's people waving their arms around and shit. And I was just kind of I was standing there just getting into the tune, so I really like it. And all of a sudden, I turn to my right hand side and Mark Andrews is there, and it's like, Jesus Christ, where did he come from? So he just bolted straight down the aisleway. Yeah. And yeah, he covered a lot of ground.
And then Damon Moser came out and he had a new hat.
Yeah, Damon Moser, and then Jack Gallagher came out, like, and the crowd's all up on their feet, and like the reaction for Jack Gallagher was fantastic.
Really, oh yeah, was. Definitely. Like it definitely felt like a great sending off moment for him. Like he's accomplished so much very quickly.
Such a short period.
It was
of
like
time.
At the start of the year we were saying, oh, he has potential. He could really do something this year, and now he's off to WWE. It's like. What?
it's been under a year, and he's gone from being a guy that we thought was going to be potentially at some point. Keep in mind, at some point, not this year, was going to be up in the main events in Brit Rest, and he's gone to WWE ridiculously early.
And I'm like his participation in this match and his sequence with his sneaky good feud with Zach Gibson this year. Came to an end with Gibson going over.
Same, like they've got the same Manchester background. Future Shock. So I saw a match.
They were both on the Tetsujin show. They had a match there with Gi wearing Gallagher beating Gibson.
Yeah, they've been working together for a while, and they've got really good chemistry. It's kind of a shame that they've got to the point where they will probably at some point have like a Progress title match that would have been really good. And he's gone, so they can't. It's a bit of a bummer.
But I liked the way Gibson won with a new finisher, the spinning suplex thingy. It doesn't have a name yet.
I don't know what the name is now.
The Anfield suplex, I don't know.
I know there was they got the car stereo in just right before that.
Came back to save the day.
So... You know, they've kind of been introducing these things, and you were thinking, oh, it's because they're done, but it could just be that they're taking it to a whole nother level.
Mm-hmm. And they are, because Gibson's challenging for the title at the next show.
Yeah, I'd really hope he doesn't win.
There would be scenes of a different nature if he did.
Yes, yeah. I think they've got a problem there because, like, they can't go jobbing out Haskins like straight away because he's too good for that. He needs to have a run.
But then, shenanigans will happen.
I think they're looking at Gibson and thinking like, well, he's got this much. He has main event heat. So it's just how long do you hold off? And they put him straight in there. But that kind of suggests to me that they're going to put him in there so he can narrowly lose and then come back later and win like Haskins has done, like Ospreay did. That seems to be the pattern for their champions.
Okay, so do you have anything else to say about this match, or should we move on to the main event?
I like the Dave Mastiff in this match. I'm going to have to give him some credit. My favourite Mastiff moment was when Gallagher tied all the rest of the Origin up in the the submission. Well, it's not a submission hold, it's just a hold. Where he just ties them up into a ball, which is called I Bloody Love the Graps Me. And then you've got Mastiff gets in the ring and he's trying to figure out how to undo it. It's just, you can see the cogs kind of whirring away. Yeah. And they just kind of knock someone over sideways. Or, oh, there we go. That's good stuff. It's good stuff good from stuff. Mastiff in that match.
Okay, so now the main event, the triple threat for the Progress Championship. Mark Haskins is the champion. He defeated the former champion Marty Scurll, and I'm sensing a theme here, the departing Tommy End.
Yes. Well, we were talking about this and saying, like, well, Tommy End has to be in this rap match for a reason. and in the end, he wasn't. He was just there.
In the end, he wasn't even part of the fall. He was just there to look really good and kick out of all of Marty Scurll's offense. Which makes you question why. Because we've said Ciampa and Gallagher put over people on the way out, and now Gibson and Sabre look really good. And in the end, just didn't.
No. But then I kind of understand the finish had to be what it was.
They were telling stories.
Yeah. So you had Jimmy Havoc come out to a monstrous reaction and people singing along to his tune that the AFI song, I Hope You Suffer. That's it. So when that kicked in and like he came out, the reaction was just ridiculous. It was 2,000 people just going completely apeshit. But then he comes into the ring, gives Skull the old acid rainmaker, and I figure, well, that's the end of the match then. And yet, you know, Skull's up after that, hitting people with umbrellas. It just seemed really weird that like they had Havoc come out, do this big spot that should, you know, change the course of the match, and yet there's Skull still hitting offense afterwards. It was really odd.
Yeah, Tommy End also did a dive onto Haskins on the outside, and then like seconds later, Haskins was up and like sharpshootering Skull for the finish. It was, the end was very odd, I guess.
Well, they had a lot of stuff that they wanted to put into that finish, and they put it all in there, and it kind of didn't work like it could have done. That said, I did really enjoy the match. I thought all three of them did good work. Skull's entrance was terrific with the four Skurlettes or whatever they were.
The Skurl girls.
Skurl girls. And the umbrellas and the fur coats. I thought that was a nice touch. It made him look like a real big star, and it made the whole main event featuring three European talents feel like it was worthy of being there.
I thought Tommy End's entrance gear looked amazing. I thought he looked like a proper star, like a WWE superstar in his entrance. Like with the face paint and the black streamers. Felt like a funeral.
Well, he's going
like
to do
satanic
well.
Satanic funeral.
You know he's going to do well when he goes.
He is going to do well. He has the perfect look.
I think of all the guys that we've lost, I think Tommy is the one who has gone there with the most to gain. I think he has potential to be a real big star in America because he has a unique look. He has terrific in-ring skill, especially with the strikes. He's unprecedented in that, and he can talk. He cuts.
I think
a great
he can get to the same kind of overness in NXT as Nakamura. I don't know about main roster. I'm sure he'll do well on the main roster, but I think with that Full Sail crowd, they'll eat him up.
Yeah.
They'll love him.
I think the problem he will have all the time is that Vince seems to have this thing about not pushing like people who can't speak English as a first language.
But then he speaks it like a first language.
Yeah,
almost.
He's completely
like, he has an accent,
English,
but...
And his promos are really good. So that could possibly work in his favour. But then I've always thought Cesaro's promos are really good, and it seems to be a hindrance for him. He can speak seven languages, but... Yeah.
Hmm. I was very meh on the match. I was just waiting for the finish, and I think a lot of the crowd were as well. Like, everyone knew shenanigans were going to occur, especially in the triple threat atmosphere.
My second viewing of it, I liked the match a lot more because I knew where it was going. So I enjoyed the various little one-on-one sequences that they had, and a couple of the triple, the three-way things, like Haskins getting both of them in the armbar. both of the baby faces doing the Superkick Just Kidding deal to Skrull. I thought they did some good stuff in the match. I really enjoyed it. But like I say, at the time, it was constantly waiting for what's going to happen, like what's the finish going to be. And I was just, I don't know if I was nervous, but I really wanted Mark Haskins to win. And that played into my reactions when I was there live.
Do you think that with the Jimmy Havoc interference and the farewell for the three guys leaving after this match, that Haskins' actual title win moment got a bit lost in the shuffle?
When I was watching it live, it did. Because as soon as the match was over, they had Tommy Enders. Because on the VOD, you see Haskins getting his hand raised by Tommy End and hugging, and that's like the end of the show. It's like Haskins there with the belt.
I think that's a much better end of the show, to be honest.
Yeah, that was a good finish to the show. But basically what happened after that was Mark Haskins left, went to the back. Tommy End stayed out there, and they brought out Ciampa and Jack Gallagher, and all three of them got like a send-off with all the crowds standing up and applauding and stuff. And I'm sure I said something to Jim Smallman about this, saying that it felt odd that, you know, you have this champion who'd been battling to get to the top, and like he finally gets there, and you finish the show with like three guys who are leaving. Mm. And I thought that was really weird. So to see it not happen on the VOD, that was a lot better for me. That really capped the show off perfectly, having it finish with Haskins holding the belt in the air. That was a much better visual.
Definitely. The champion is the one staying on. Guys leaving have already had their moment. I'm being cynical, obviously, but I don't feel like they needed to do that curtain call at the end. Like, I feel that was just a bit of posturing. Like, I'm sure it was fun for the live crowd to say goodbye to them in that way, but like, it kind of undercuts the champion. Yeah,
but I'm glad, like I said before, they didn't do that on the VOD. So it was only if you were there live that it felt like his moment had got like overshadowed by the three guys that were leaving. And it was nice for those three guys to get to stand there and get, you know, applauded by a couple of thousand people, because all three of them deserve it. I wish them all the best of luck in the bigs. The big leagues.
Definitely. It's exciting. It's an exciting time for wrestling to see all these guys get a shot in a place where traditionally these guys would not get a shot. No. So we'll see how it goes.
Especially Jack Gallagher. It's really weird seeing him off to the land of the giants.
But he feels like he belongs.
Well, that's fair play to him.
That was Brixton. And depending on like how important you place match quality over just like big moments and stuff, the show may have been a disappointment. I don't think it was per se, but maybe from a match quality point of view, it didn't live up to what it could have been.
I think we're going to disagree slightly on this, because I thought the main event was just north of 4 stars. But based on the story that they were telling and the way that they got there, I thought all the work in the main event's very good. Also, Sabre and Ciampa, I thought, was north of 4 stars. I thought that. But then I really liked the technical stuff, and that match was technical heavy. When I was watching it live, I could kind of sense people around me kind of drifting out of the match a little bit. But on tape, when I was watching it back, I was absolutely riveted to a match that I'd already seen. So, I thought both those matches were really good. And the tag title match, like I say, just a shade under 4. I thought those three matches were worth turning up for. And the women's match was good. And the Origin match was good. So what more do you want?
Yeah, everything was good. There was a high floor on this show. Maybe perhaps a lower ceiling than I'm used to for a progress show, but nothing was bad at all. I enjoyed every match, or at least something about every single match. And there were plenty of moments that will be memorable. Maybe not as memorable as if I'd been alive, but there we go. That's my problem.
Oh, and I had a bit of a chat with Alan Boone before the show, okay. And he asked where you and Rob were, and when I said you weren't there, he said, "Well, I'm afraid you lose some credibility there."
Oh,
Well,
he was moving in, and it was like the day before uni for me, so those are our excuses.
Yeah, I did make excuses on your behalf, but
I'll be back in the Electric Ballroom soon enough. I'm looking forward. It's been a while since I've been to the wrestling, so.
So after the Brixton show, Progress ran like a little after show party thing at Dogstar. And like the advertising for it was basically saying, "Oh, there's going to be some wrestlers there to do, like spin the decks and stuff." And I originally wasn't going to go because like I didn't really know anyone else that was going. But we did like a little post event pint in the Beehive on the Brixton High Street, which is the cheapest place I've ever been to in London in the entire city. I had a pint for $3.49. So next year in Brixton,
very cheap.
Yeah, next year in Brixton,
yeah,
Beehive. But I kind of bumped into a few of the lads there, including a guy that's been on this podcast, Galazzo Dan, which is funny because like I'd never met him before, so we were kind of doing this round of introductions with all the people that were in the pub, and Elliot, I think his name is, the at Specific Luchador. Kind of introduced himself. I said that I was my name was Arnold, and there's Galazzo Dan going like, as in Arnold Furious. And I was like, yeah. Anyway, oh, I've done a podcast with you. That was funny.
The wonders of podcasts, bringing people together.
Done a podcast with him. Never met him. but yeah, there was a lot of guys there, and made me laugh. I was talking to Chris Linnae after the show, and he was talking to another guy and said something about Arnold Furious. And the guy goes, "Oh, is Arnold Furious there?" He started looking around. I was literally standing next to him. And I was like, yeah, it's me. Hey. So that was fun. And these guys were going to the Dogstar. So I was like, "Oh, do you mind if I tag along?" Which helped because I knew where it was and they didn't. So we walked into the Dogstar. And my expectations were fairly low. I thought, well, you know, some of the Projo guys will be there and, you know, it'll be a fun enough evening. Walked in, Roy Johnson's up there DJing. I'd say it's about like 30 people there, something like that. And I kind of get the impression that it's going to be a bit of a low-key affair, so I get completely slaughtered. And so I'm battered at this point, and Jack Sexsmith starts DJing and putting on stuff like the Quantum Leap theme tune and Creed's My Sacrifice, which is a real crowd pleaser for wrestling fans. And I may have told him that I was disappointed that I was already married because I wanted him to DJ at my wedding. I love Jack Sexsmith. He's a lovely, lovely man. So the evening goes on, and we're kind of out in the beer garden, and I mentioned like you know, does anybody know if Jim's going to be here? And they said, "Oh, Jim's in the he's in the bar in the front." So I walk through, recognize the baseball cap, and so I tap Jim Smallman on the shoulder, and he looks at me like, "Who the fuck are you?" And I introduce myself, expecting like a handshake, and he goes full on in for the hug.
Wow.
Yeah, which was quite the moment for me. So I'm like marking out, enjoying myself, giving him advice on how to run a wrestling promotion because I'm pissed. Mm-hmm. And I was constantly rambling on about how happy I was that he put the belt on Mark Haskins. And what a great wrestler Mark Haskins was. I fucking love Mark Haskins. And like slurring like nobody's business. And after a couple of minutes of this, Jim turns around to me and says, "Well, why don't you tell him?" And I was like, "Well, how can I do that?" And he literally points to right next to where I am, like literally like a foot away, and sat on the edge of the table, swinging his legs. Progress champion Mark Haskins. With the biggest fucking smile on his face that I've ever seen. Like, literally, ear to ear, he looks like he's won the fucking lottery. And it was just the whole evening was full of little moments like that. I went and had a chat with Trent Seven, and I was telling him to pass on my regards to Pete Dunne, and he goes, "Oh, Pete Dunne's in the other room." So through we go, and I'm shaking hands with Pete, telling him how proud I am of the Midlands wrestling, and so on and so forth. And what I, later on, when I'm even more inebriated, walked around a corner and Jack Gallagher was literally just stood there, like right in front of me, and I'm like, and I remember giving him an extensive pep talk on how to survive in the World Wrestling Federation, which I don't think any of it made sense. But he was very gracious, and he took everything on board and smiled and shook my hand. And he's a lovely, lovely man. They all are. They're all lovely guys. And also,
it sounds pretty cool to just walk around and find wrestlers for.
Because when I got there, you know me, I don't like to go up to wrestle. I've had like people tell me about like experiences where they've spoken to wrestlers and they've just been assholes. So I try to distance myself from that because I'd rather just
imagine
know.
That like all wrestlers are assholes. So I'm pleasantly surprised when they're not.
I've always liked to distance myself from. From the boy, I never used to. I used to hang around with a lot of wrestlers, but I've tried to distance myself from them since because I know that I'm writing about wrestling and I don't want that to be an issue.
Yeah.
But like everyone was lovely. Like everyone that was there was lovely, and I had to hold myself back in the end because I didn't want to go and like interrupt people while they're having conversations. So I just kind of naturally hang back and like every now and again I just bump into someone and have a chat. And it was great. And if they do the same thing next year, I guarantee you they're going to have more people in there because I've just rambled on about it for like 5 minutes for the Dog Star show. It was fantastic. One major issue to come out of the after show, though, was the debate that is tearing British wrestling in half.
I have heard about this.
Yes.
And I've seen it unfold.
And that is the dab debate, or the dabate. So,
the dabate.
I have to ask you, Ollie, where do you stand on dabbing?
Where do I stand on dabbing?
So I know Rob is anti. Rob is very strong anti-dabs.
I am softly anti-dab. I'm not totally against it, but it's just like, it's just a thing some football player did once. It's like, I don't get the big hype around it. It's a thing. It's certainly a thing.
I think the joy of the dab is that it is kind of a dance move that everyone can do, which when you're a very uncoordinated wrestling fan, that's kind of fun.
I just worry that it's being fandangoed by people like Hillary Clinton doing it and the like, and it's like, well, that's not cool anymore because really uncool people are trying to do it to look cool.
I don't know. Well, I did a spreadsheet on it, and generally in wrestling, most wrestlers are very pro dabbing.
I can imagine.
Pete Dunne's
I know Will Ospreay, Ryan Smile, fan of a dab. I could not imagine Pete Dunne dabbing. No.
No, he was very anti dabs. He said it was. Well, he used the word shit.
I'm in the Pete Dunne camp of anti-dab, but not strongly anti-dab. I'm not vehemently against someone dabbing. They can do it if they want to.
I'll have to feed back that information to the boys who like the dabbing. They're not going to be best pleased. So that makes it an official anti-dab podcast because it's like
an anti-dab podcast.
So yeah, that was the Brixton after show. Just a hell of a lot of fun. It didn't take an awful lot of organising, but they had guys in there DJing, and you know the wrestlers were having a good time.
Sounds so awesome.
Yeah, credit to Progress for doing something with wrestling interaction where drunkenness was involved. Normally, if you're drunk and you're getting like the wrestling interaction going, it's kind of frowned upon. I imagine if you go to like Access and you have to excuse yourself to go and vomit, then that's perhaps frowned upon in wrestling circles. But no, it was a positive atmosphere, and as you always get with the majority of Progress fans, I enjoyed that a great deal.
But of course, you're all alcoholics, so.
Yeah, apparently.
We'll move on. We have fun. We'll move on to what do we want to talk about next? Do we want to talk about the Osprey documentary, or do we want to talk about WCPW?
Oh, everyone's favorite. Yeah, I think we might have to talk about WCPW. It was their pay-per-view last night, as we record this on the 7th of October. They had a live pay-per-view last night. It was an absolute fucking disaster, would be the only way I could possibly describe it. I think I saw about 7 minutes of like a 2.5, 2 hour 45 minute show, which is the second half of the main event. Literally nothing else worked. I sat there for the entire show hitting refresh. And if you follow me on Twitter at Arnold Furious, you could just go and look at the GIFs that I put up. It's nothing worked.
I've seen some of it, and it's bad. It's like
it kept getting
refreshing
stuck in loops.
2 seconds. Oh, it, like awful. Looping like 2 seconds of action and then buffering for a minute and then looping again.
I had that one loop of Jim Ross saying the damage is done with Adam Blompier hitting Rampage Brown in the ribs with a kendo stick. Over and over and over again. It went on for minutes. To the point where I told someone it was happening on Twitter. He told me to record it. I did, posted it, and it was still looping. Like after I'd taped it on my phone and posted it onto Twitter. And it wasn't a very quick connection off the phone.
I guess the important thing is, obviously we've seen iPay-per-views fuck up in the past when it comes to wrestling. But getting refunded for at least the live portion of what you pay for is maybe an important thing. So is that happening? Or
I've not seen anything, but I would imagine some kind of an apology show is in order. But then it's basically signing up to the network. It's like if you sign up to the network and you watch SummerSlam, let's say, and it buffers live, which it never does because they test it first. But you know, if that were to happen, do you think you get like a refund? I wouldn't have thought so.
There's the difference. WWE launched their network, like knowing that their live streams would definitely work every single time, and they have because they actually put some planning into it.
Yeah, but this is the problem.
Whereas his,
I mean, like just the Fight TV version worked. Martin Bentley was watching it on Fight TV. He put down the extra money. Okay. So I looked at it and like you could pay like $15 to watch it on Fight TV, or you could pay like $7, I think it was, and you get like a monthly subscription to this What Culture Extra. Well, that seemed like a no-brainer to me. It's like WWE still running pay-per-view when you can get the network for $10. It's why would you keep buying the pay-per-views? It doesn't really make any sense. So I just ponied up my $7 and watched the What Culture Extra version of the show, and it didn't work. It didn't work at all. Like the whole show was broken the whole way through.
Sucks to hear.
Yeah, it did suck. I watched it this morning, so I've actually seen the show. Because they left the stream up, so you could just basically rewind to the start of the stream and then play it from there. And it worked like that, but the whole point of paying to watch wrestling live is that you see it live, and I didn't get to see shit.
Yeah, it's a fuck up. Are they doing any more pay-per-views soon? Do we know?
I haven't seen anything planned. I know they're running like 3 shows on this tour. So there's one today, there's one tomorrow.
Yeah,
and those shows will eventually find their way onto the YouTube. So I don't know what the plan is. Presumably the next iPay-per-view, if they were going to run one, would be the end of November, start of December, because Matt Hardy's coming over. So presumably that would be when they do the next one. I would guess it'd be over a month after now, so if somebody signed up for What Culture Extra, they don't get 2 big shows for it. if you know what I mean.
Mm.
They'd have to sign up again.
It's disappointing news, certainly. Like considering it's like such a big platform for people outside of Britain, outside of Europe, to watch British wrestling, and then it fucks up like that. It's not particularly good.
I kind of got the feeling that when they're doing it on a Thursday, that they probably weren't aiming for a global audience, and they're probably just trying to get people from the UK to tune in. But they must have had like more people viewing than they thought they would, because it just didn't work. Which is a pity, really, because when I watch the show back, it's actually quite good. Like the quality of the wrestling on the show is like reasonable. It probably I'd say the best match was Joseph Connors against Martin Kirby. That was a very good match. It was a good storyline that they got going on. So the quality of the show was fine.
But how was the Suzuki match?
It was okay. It was fine. Joe Coffey. I guess they went about 10 minutes. Suzuki was a complete dick all the way through. Wouldn't sell or anything. It wasn't great or anything. It was okay.
And of course, Rampage Brown versus that guy from What Culture.
Adam Blompier, who gets some pretty reasonable heat for what he's doing. It's kind of a, like a, I want to say he's a manager, I would say. I don't really understand how the running of it works, because Adam Pacitti, the other Adam, is the general manager. So I don't really know what Blompier does other than manage, and he hasn't got a. Like the guys that he had help him were like Prospect, who were managed by James R. Kennedy, so they already have a manager, and Big Damo, who was supposed to be in Florida and is never going to work for the company again. So, I don't really know what the deal is there. I don't know if they're just trying to phase those guys out, because they had, on the same show, they had Primate and his... relationship with his manager, which was Susie Kennedy, who's another one of the YouTube stars, as it were.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're just trying to phase all that out. But that would kind of take away from what they were trying to do in the first place, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
I feel like we should move on. Talk about WCPW for far too long.
Yeah, that's fine.
We'll move on to... Osprey, the documentary that has gone up on Kickstarter to be funded. It's being produced by Ryan Kass, who runs the Tag Rope magazine. Really cool magazine.
That is a good magazine.
For them in the past. He is starting a Kickstarter. He hopes to raise, I believe it is $15,000 to fund. About half more of recording this documentary about William Ospreay. William Ospreay, wow. It just came out like that. Will Ospreay. Also, William Ospreay is his Twitter name. I've been reading his Twitter a bit, so I think it just got stuck in my head. Will/William Ospreay, about his life, career, as it goes into a very interesting phase. We're gearing up for Wrestle Kingdom, and they're hoping to raise the money to fly out to that and follow him around Japan as he goes to Wrestle Kingdom, which sounds really interesting to me.
So basically, they need the money to fly to Japan, is what they're saying.
And follow him around. They're gonna like record him at the Rev Pro shows, a few more What Culture shows. But yeah, the general bulk of it will be to fly out to Japan and spend some time in Japan. And also buy whatever production stuff they need. He has it all laid out on his Kickstarter. It seems very well planned for something that's rather come out of the blue. They seem to have like very much nailed down the finances and stuff, so you can read about the details all there and about what they're aiming to do, and also a trailer for what they've already recorded. Because they essentially realized that they have inadvertently recorded so much stuff on Will Ospreay that they may as well go even further in trying to produce something feature length about him from the stuff that they've already recorded, interviews, in-ring stuff, etc. They recorded him and his bit on the Paul Heyman evening when he offered him that fake Evolve contract, which probably isn't going to go anywhere, but still an interesting moment.
Well, no, because he's signed for Ring of Honor instead.
So yeah, it's gotten a mixed reception, I would say, mainly surrounding the choice of Will Ospreay as the subject of the piece. People are saying, I had a chat about this to some of the other Voices of Wrestling staffers, some of them are saying that Ospreay is not an interesting person to have a feature-length documentary about, like, his story isn't worthy of that, I guess, but I would say that his wrestling career, especially this year, has been very newsworthy. We've all been talking about him one way or another. A Brit in Japan, it's exciting, it's different. And to I would say specifically following him to Wrestle Kingdom and following him around on the day of the show, that would be some very interesting stuff that I would potentially like to see. What do you think, Arn?
Well, I watched the New Japan World did... a load of real short documentary pieces on Will. I think about 10 minutes a piece, was it?
They did some of him traveling to Sumo Hall for Invasion Attack.
So they did a few pieces with him, and they were fine. I can see where people are coming from if they're saying it's just not going to be that interesting, because he just kind of spent the whole time going, wow, that's impressive, and this is a dream come true. I don't know if like the other people are saying, I don't know if Will is interesting enough to carry that for like 90 minutes.
It's certainly a concern.
When I watched those little 10 minute pieces, I was like, well, this is really nice. It's nice to see how humble he is. It's nice to see that those reactions from him. But if it's stretched out to 90 minutes, I think he needs something else. And I don't know what else they would talk about, because he is a relatively straightforward guy. He wrestles and he doesn't have that personality. Like, say, if it was Marty Scurll. Marty Scurll doesn't, run his mouth all the time. he tends to.
That is certainly one thing that has turned people off Will Ospreay, is he comes across as a bit of a dick. I'm not saying that he is. It's just the way he presents himself. He's cocky.
Yeah. And he's only young, so I can totally understand that. Maybe it might just be early in his career to do this kind of thing.
I would say his youth makes him a little more interesting in that regard, because his route to the top has been very quick. It has been very sudden.
That's true.
It's unconventional.
It is fairly unique.
I get where people are coming from saying he doesn't have a story that would span 90 minutes, but that would almost say that all documentaries have to be like a hard luck story of someone like struggling to get to the top and then getting there, etc., and going through strife. Maybe this is a different angle. Maybe seeing a guy who hasn't gone through that adversity now dealing with the very top. There's something there,
Successful
I think.
Successful people are always less interesting than failures. I think that's the main cause for concern. I'll tell you who I would love to see cameras follow around right now, and that's Brian Kendrick. Because you could do the whole thing of where was he for 10 years? He's kind of fell off the map, but he still loved wrestling. And the emotion that guy has, because he knows he's at Last Chance Saloon, it's like, there's a story. There's a story worth shouting about, which is what they did on the Cruiserweight Classic. Whereas with Will, it's like he's got the world at his feet. He's got his career ahead of him. I'm
it's
just
certainly
not sure
a concern
how interesting that's going to be. Maybe if they focus on the whole process of going to Japan, wrestling in Japan, what wrestling is like, maybe a bit more insight into how the business works, maybe, and how hard or easy it is to get booked in other places.
Yeah,
that would be interesting to me. It's just if they follow Will around and we're just hearing his takes on everything, I don't know if I've been to
his Ospreay eating a burger. His Ospreay in a car. Yeah, I could see that it was potentially a concern that he's not the most interesting subject. I would say he's very topical. And also, even if you're not a fan of Ospreay, even if you're not interested in his story, the fact that someone is ambitious enough to try and take this on, and maybe it won't come off, maybe the Kickstarter will fail, I hope he gets enough money to be able to go out to Japan and make something and give us a finished product. Even if you're not a fan of this particular subject, the fact that this is getting made and potentially pushing the way we look at wrestling into new areas is only good for you as a wrestling fan, because it means that more stuff like this could be made in the future and surpass it, and we could get a whole new way of looking at wrestling and a new way of documenting wrestling than just, like, you know, the sheets that we're used to.
Yeah. Well, I certainly think it's Brian Cass. He seems like a good guy. The little fanzine thing that he does is really good. So yeah, I hope he does succeed. I'd watch it.
If you're part of wrestling Twitter, you may well have already been aware of this, because he'll probably have added or followed you on Twitter already with the Ospreay account. But I don't know what its Twitter handle is, but if you just search
it's
Ospreay,
just Ospreay
film,
isn't it? Ospreay film,
and you can read about the Kickstarter and see whether or not you want to donate to it and whether or not it interests you. Yeah, it's an intriguing concept and it's an intriguing project, and I hope it goes somewhere pretty interesting.
Okay, so we're going to have a little bit of a chat about Global Wars. I know it's still a month away at this point, but some of the matches that they have named so far are tantalizing.
Pretty good.
Tantalizing. They're the kind of matches where if I was sat there thinking, what kind of combinations of wrestlers would I like to see on these shows? That's exactly what they've booked.
Yeah.
So I have a list of five matches in front of me that are taking place during the two Global War shows. I'm not sure which one's on which show. I haven't looked on the site. I've just looked on their Twitter feed from the past couple of days. So we've got Mustache Mountain and Mark Haskins against Los Ingobernables de Japón. That's going to be a very strong trios match. Very sure there's no weak link.
Authentic Ingobernables action.
That should be outstanding. We've got Jushin Liger is wrestling against Will Ospreay on the one night and Marty Skrull on the other. The Ospreay one, when they named that, I was like, I wasn't that excited, because they'll probably do that in New Japan anyway at some point.
They've already done it in Super Juniors.
Yeah, that was like just a block match, wasn't it? But they might do it as a proper singles match at some point during his winding his Liger's career down, because he's into his last like 5 years, I think he said.
Yeah. More like a bigger event.
Yeah,
kind of
chances are he'll want to wrestle Will Ospreay at some point. So I wasn't so hot on that, but Liger versus Skrull is potentially the only time that you'll ever see this match.
Yeah. it's two ultra charismatic guys going at it. Should be very, very fun.
Very excited about that. We've got Sabre is defending the title against Shibata if he's fit, which I think he's okay.
Yeah, he's on King of Pro Wrestling in a few
days. They've been taking him off the Road 2 shows.
Yeah. I think he'll show up.
Yeah, so you've got Sabre and Shibata 2. I know Rob wasn't keen on the first one, but I really liked it.
I really liked it too.
We have, this was named this morning, Michael Elgin against Trent Seven. Yeah.
It's going to be hard hitting. It's going to be strong style.
Well, you say that, but that's probably not going to be the hardest hitting match on the show, because mm-hmm. they've also booked Tomohiro Ishii against Chris Hero.
My neck hurts.
Just thinking about it.
Just thinking about it.
It's like they're booking for us. It's like they're going like, well, oh, the Britwrestling Roundtable guys are coming to those shows. Let's book a few matches for them. Jesus.
Yeah.
The quality of those alone is going to be well worth going and then some. And that's not even the four card. So it's like a month away and I'm already beyond excited for those matches and those shows.
The Ishihiro match is tempting me to skip my lecture on Friday. I only have one lecture on Friday because art subject.
You only have one lecture to miss, but you don't want to miss Hero versus Ishii, do you?
I think wrestling is more important than my education. And I may ask around from listeners what they think I should do. Do they think I should stay up in Birmingham and study hard,
no,
hit the books, or should I watch two men?
What is the lecture
ruin
on?
Their non-existent necks? It is on Sparta, I believe. You know, manly Spartans.
That's fairly manly. Can you not get notes?
I have no friends because I spend all my time watching wrestling. So.
Oh dear.
Maybe not. It's recorded. They have this newfangled thing where they can like record lectures and like the slideshow comes up with it.
Then why does anyone go anymore?
Because you have to like, they take attendance, and if you don't go, then you're a bad person. I think I can skip one. I'll just claim illness, and
I hope they don't listen to the podcast.
I'm pretty sure they don't listen.
it's pretty safe. We're a niche podcast.
I enjoy being in this niche.
No
one needs to know.
Our niche is getting slowly bigger because the whole start of the Voices of Wrestling flagship show this week was dedicated to British wrestling.
Like, it's exciting.
Yeah,
we're getting recognised by the big boys.
The big boys. And Joe talked extensively about Progress and what a great promotion it was on last week's flagship as well. And I think that speaks volumes for how good the British scene is. And we've been saying this for the past 2 years, that this is as good now as it ever has been. We've got it so good. And it's showing no signs of slowing down. I mean, even that we're losing guys like Tommy End, Big Damo, Jack Gallagher, Noam Dar. There are people who are slotting into those spots. Unthinkable a couple of years ago. If you lose like four top guys out of Brit Wrestling, like who the hell's going to replace them? And now there's people queuing up.
It's awesome to hear Joe Lanza like say, oh, American indies are so far behind the British indies in like presentation and even like the wrestlers themselves. That's pretty exciting to hear that this is like the forefront. This is where you go if you want great wrestling outside of Japan and outside of WWE.
It certainly changed my viewing habits.
Europe is the place.
My viewing habits used to be like when ROH was really strong, I used to watch a lot of American indies. This is like when Danielson was there and Samoa Joe and so on and so forth. So we're talking like 10 years ago now. And since then, I've kind of lent towards Japan. I've always watched some Brit Rest, but at the moment, I'm watching far more than I ever have done before, and it's because it's so good. So when you've got that and quality, you keep coming back.
It's going beyond even the top tier. So you got Progress, Rev Pro, and WXW, which are, you know, the three big ones in terms of like match quality and presentation. And you got ICW, but we're not particularly big fans of that because they don't emphasize match quality as much as just Attitude Era stuff. But they have a niche fandom.
Fear and Loathing, I would have thought.
Mm. But then you've also got Fight Club Pro, which are killing it right now.
They are fantastic. And Attack.
And like, loads of other promotions like Attack and even just like your local indie is putting on good stuff and developing talent for the future. It's pretty cool.
It's very exciting. And apparently Joe's joining us now because he made some kind of demand last week that if he didn't get a Union Jack, I can't remember exactly what the demand was. It was something along the lines of he wanted the God Save the Queen or something played on the introduction. If he didn't get it, he was leaving, coming to join the Brit Wrestling Roundtable. But It didn't happen. So, I guess next week we'll be chatting to Joe.
And, well, we'll be chatting to Sarah Keneally
and Sarah
about
Keneally.
The World Tag League soon enough.
And presumably Rob's going to want in on that, so like we won't be on the show at all.
We're on a rotation now, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Where's this big demand? Big demand for the Brit Rest.
Well, it's all progress from here, quite literally.
Speaking of progress, their season tickets went on sale this past week, and I kind of bought one. So I'll be going to a lot of progress shows.
There's that 12 shows, I believe, or 11 or 12.
It's a,
on the season ticket.
It's a lot. It's hang on.
And you also get 10% off of merchandise, I do believe. So you'll be buying lots of merch.
Yeah, I'm just trying to add it up, but the Strong Style 16 is 3 days next year, so there's it's like 12 shows. It's good value for money.
Do you have any other thoughts, or should we wrap it up here?
I think we're done.
But I've really enjoyed this episode. We covered a lot of stuff, and I think we have a direction for the future. We've always been very like haphazard, but we've been like almost taking notes on air about like what's coming up next. We got apparently Joe Lanza, the overlord of VOW, coming in, and also the tag league preview. So definitely look forward.
Next time we're doing the WXW. The tag league review, because the show's already happened. But I've already seen the first two nights, and the second one was blow away good. It was fantastic. So I imagine we'll have some fun talking about that.
All right. Plugs. Do you want to plug anything?
No, I'm fine.
Follow me at Another Ollie and the Voices of Wrestling review of Progress Chapter 36 has dropped as we were recording. So yeah. Make sure you have a read of that. Progress's biggest show of the year. And yeah, we will see you again next time on the Britrest Roundtable.
Good evening.
Good night.